It totally does. All right, sound check, sound check. One, two, one, two. Everything's good.
I have done a bit of research here.
Okay, good.
It's not well laid out. I'm not like Nancy. I'm not a professional at this, but...
Boy, if I got you fooled, you hear me stumble and bumble. I'm like, what the hell did I write here? I forgot half of what I wanted to say.
Oh, God.
The only thing you can really say is it was all in English. I never understood it. It was all in English.
Did you guys hear the joke about this suicidal fellow is on a bridge, is about to jump? And then he's met by somebody, says, "Don't jump." And he says, "Yeah, I got to jump. Nobody loves me." And the guy says, "Well, God loves you." He says, "Yeah, well, maybe." He says, "Are you Christian?" "Yes." "Well, me too." He says, "You happy? Catholic or Protestant?" "Protestant." "Wow, me too." So he says, "Are you evangelical?" "Yeah." "Well, whoa, me too." "You happen to be Baptist by any chance?" "Yes, so am I." "Wow. Are you like the first church of Baptist or second?" "Second." Then you just pushed him off the bridge and said, "You heretic."
I was waiting for that.
Oh, let's do this.
Hi, this is Jeff D.
Hi, my name is Gary Savard.
Check it out, Bubba Brinkman.
I am the Supreme Irreverend Dr. Randy Tyson.
Hi, this is Jody Emery.
Hi, I'm R.N. Rod.
Hi, I'm James Rand.
Hi, this is Phil Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Michael Shermer.
Hi, I'm Eli Bosnick.
Hi, this is David Silverman from American Atheists, and I took a left at the Valley.
And that was the best turn I ever made.
I know we shouldn't have to scream that we're atheists. You know, we don't have non-astrologers and all that. But with religious people taking over the world, I mean, we can either speak up or be pushed into a corner.
I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Coming at you from some secret lair, Abbotsford, BC, this is Left of the Valley. My name is Kevin, and I ask you, if a word was misspelled in the dictionary, how would you know? Joining me is a team willing to test that if one synchronized swimmer drowns, does the rest of them drown too? She told a joke in the forest and nobody heard it. Was it still a joke? Teresa. Her friend had a baby. She recorded all the noise so she can ask him later what he meant. Nancy.
Oh.
And he.
Even the great one can get bum fuzzled every now and then. Oh, okie dokie. That's me. Yes, I'm. Okay.
And he.
Hi,
used,
everybody.
He used to own an ant farm, but unfortunately he couldn't find tractors small enough to fit in. Scott.
Yeah, they're a bugger to find. I tried hard.
Guys, welcome back. Oh, this show always starts on a laugh, doesn't it? We're going to have a great show today. We're going to be talking about apophenia leading to pareidolia. Wow, that should be fun and interesting. I have no idea what it means.
But neither do I.
Well, the I question, hope you do. The question is, can you locate them on a map?
That's right. But first, let's do a bit of chit-chat. We've got lots of things to go through. Guys, did you hear that the new president of France, Emmanuel Macron, pulls a Trudeau? And he actually decides to, all half his cabinet is going to be women.
He's so enlightened.
You know,
no. Trudeau was so ahead of his time.
Well, apparently Trudeau's was leading by example, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is exactly what's happening now. So hopefully this trend continues in other governments.
So I wonder what the question will be for the French president.
Well, probably because it's 2017 instead of 2015, right?
Well, you have to give his wife credit because she steered his career for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure his decision to have women was whispered in his ear quite a while.
Yeah, not to forget his mistress either, right?
Yeah.
French politicians always have a mistress on the side, I'm sure.
he's lucky there's any men left in the cabinet.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? There's this apparently there's the wife of a daredevil, Nick Wallenda, and she's a daredevil too. Apparently, she plans to hang from a helicopter over Niagara Falls only by her teeth.
This sounds.
I hope they're real. That's what I kept thinking too.
Are somebody's teeth going to fall out?
Well, it's a story with bite, obviously.
Obviously,
oh.
June 15th, apparently, this is the anniversary of where Nick tightrope walk over Niagara Falls. He did that about 5 years ago. And her name is Erendira Vasquez Walenda, and she's going to hang over by helicopter over Niagara Falls with her teeth. Okay, sure. Whatever floats your boat.
Sponsored by Polident. Or Colgate, depending on the status of her teeth.
Okay, I stumbled upon this interesting little story. Apparently, scientists found in Siberia a 40,000-year-old bracelet. Now, what's interesting about this bracelet, it's very sophisticated, and it was found in the, Penisova Cave, near the Chinese border. But the thing about this bracelet is it was actually made from another human species, not from Homo sapiens. It was made by the Denisovan people, apparently.
Very cool.
Yeah, they apparently left Africa after the first wave of Homo erectus left Africa. They coexisted with Neanderthal and sapiens. Apparently, there is some DNA evidence that proved that there was some hybridization. They were much more robust, but the bracelet was made of chlorite. But the skill needed to make the bracelet, which was actually quite refined, is, they say, 30,000 years ahead of its time.
Very cool.
And they analyzed this bracelet for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's actually, for such a primitive species. And it kind of makes you wonder, what if that species would have been allowed to continue?
Comic book. I think I saw a comic book about this once when I was a kid.
That you supposed to hear the comic book?
Well, an archaeologist goes in and he finds a wedding ring, and it's his wedding ring.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. It's a time travel story, right?
No, that is cool. Do they know anything else about that particular?
No, I mean, they analyzed for 7 years, and the craftsmanship and the way it was drilled in, using tools of the time, showed a high degree of sophistication.
Yeah.
It's not like a piece of leather tied together. It's actually quite impressive.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they find other artifacts.
Yes, exactly.
Learn a little bit more about them.
In great news, the U.S. government orders homeopathic treatments to be labeled "does not work." Apparently, the U.S. government requires producers to prove the efficiency of the product. Otherwise, they have to label that it has not been proven so.
Well, why would anyone manufacture a product that's put on the shelf and labeled 1995 but does not work? You think sales are going to tank?
They're not going to use that wording, obviously.
No, they're probably going to say,
these haven't been approved by the FDA or something like that. They're going to approve some kind of comment like that. But I think it's a step towards taking out those homeopathic
Could be an interesting new step. I'm seeing this go into other products. Samsung phones maybe may explode spontaneously.
Truth in advertising.
E-cigarettes will explode in your pocket.
Really bad for your health. Other news, NASA wants to send people to the moon. Apparently, we know that NASA's been trying to put a manned mission to Mars by 2030. But in the meantime, they want to send people to the moon to spend 1 year around the late 2020s as a preparation for a manned mission to Mars. So that should be interesting as well.
Are they training already?
I don't know. It's in the late 2020s.
Well, I would assume they would probably start recruiting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It seems so silly. I mean, 1969, we had people on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it? 1969 to 1972?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Yeah. And 40 years later, we're going, we should be going to the moon. You've already been there. We had the technology to do it.
Well, but we went to the moon and came back right away. To go to the moon and stay a year, that's a whole different ball game, right?
Well, we're staying in a space station for 6 months to a year at a time now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Right?
So the technology's there.
Yeah, but yes and no, because, when you need to send some supplies to the space station, it's not that big of a trip. If you need to send supplies to the moon, that's a big trip.
Oh, yeah.
So they're using that as a stepping stone.
Yeah, for staging area. It's a lot easier to launch things from the moon than it is to launch from Earth.
That's true as well, yeah. You don't have to fight gravity as well.
You also don't have the garbage field that you have around Earth.
That as well. And finally, our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is going to ask the Pope to apologize for the residential school. He's supposed to meet the Pope at Vatican City May 29th. And this was a recommendation from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report, which was one of 94 calls for action. And he's going to ask the Pope to actually come home, well, come home, come to Canada and apologize to these residential school survivors. Now, whether or not what's-his-face Pope Frankie decides to do it is another...
Ballgame. What are the odds?
The fact that he's actually taking that step means that he's kind of taking this a bit seriously.
Yes. And by the way, do you know where our Prime Minister was yesterday?
Oh, yeah. We just had a beer together. Got an interview with him later.
He came right through here, didn't he? Yeah.
No, I don't know. Did he?
Yes, he was. He was here. I've seen his picture.
Oh.
His photo.
You saw the hair?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know he was coming to Abbotsford until I...
Oh, wait, he was in Abbotsford?
He came into Abbotsford.
How come nobody told me this?
Nobody told anybody. Nobody knew.
Well, but you told me a day late.
Well, that's when I found out.
I found out about it yesterday before he got here, but it was too late to...
Yeah.
We'll actually probably find out later that Nancy was right by him.
Yeah, Nancy. Yeah.
She marshaled his plane in, you know.
Not marshaled, I flew it. Gee whiz.
Shook his head when he stepped off the ladder.
And parachuted out and marshaled it in. Come on, give me a little credit.
Oh, that was our little chit
chat. I'm too modest to tell you these things myself until I'm forced to.
I guess now is our time for This Day in History. Nancy, mic's all yours.
Oh, okay, here we go. It is this day in history, which, as we all know, is a roundup of those events and people that altered and illuminated the days between May 15 and May 21st. Starting with May 15, it was International Day of Families. So here's one of my favorite all-time stories. And considering what's going on in Washington, D.C., with counter-espionage and the Russians, this absolutely fits right in. It's going back to the 60s, but regardless of the time, this is really a great, great story. At the height of the Cold War, officials in the United States hatched a covert plan to keep tabs on the Russians in Washington, D.C. They would, they decided, deploy surveillance cats. I kid you not. Cats. Surveillance cats. Surgically implanted with microphones and radio transmitters to slip by security and eavesdrop on activity at the Soviet embassy. Now, this is true.
Wow.
This is not fake news.
Here's your mission, 00 pussy. You choose to accept it.
They couldn't make a movie this good.
That's right. You got the transcripts of that. That's right. We know it's true. Kevin has a transcript. Anyway, the project went by the thinly disguised code name Acoustic Kitty. This is so much fun. Anyway, they operated on this poor cat, put batteries in him, and wired him up. And this was according to a guy that wrote a book. His name was Victor Marchetti, and he was the executive assistant to the director of the CIA in the 1960s. So a book came out of this actually in 2001 called The Wizards of Langley. So it's in the book, and it's in Google, no problem to find it. Anyway, here this poor little kitty is with the batteries and everything else, and the final little thing that they did to really make this embarrassing to the cat was his tail was used as an antenna. What an iniquity to this poor cat. So in this book, The Wizards of Langley, he characterized it by saying they made a monstrosity. Anyway, so now they've got this whiskered, yowling, unbelievably expensive monstrosity. The CIA put $10 million into designing, operating on, and training the first acoustic kitty. And that's according to several accounts.
You know, it only cost $6 million for Lee Majors.
Yeah, I was just thinking that in 1970, what was it, 1976 or whatever?
Yeah.
The $6 million man.
I know, and here is the bionic cat, you know, costing more money. Anyway, so they get this poor kitty all stitched up and wired up, and his tail is up in the air, and it finally came time for the inaugural mission. And the CIA agents released one of the agents, who was a rookie agent, from the back of a nondescript van and watched as he set out on his mission. So Acoustic Kitty dashed off toward the embassy, making it all of 10 feet before he was unceremoniously struck by a passing taxi.
No, 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 you lie. You are lying.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? There they were, these agents sitting in the van, and the cat was $10 million roadkill in the middle of the unbelievable.
Oh, so, my God.
So the CIA eventually scrapped the project, including, according to partially redacted documents in George Washington University archives, that despite the energy and imagination of those involved, they decided it would not be practical to continue to try and train cats as spies. Now, if had tried it again, and that cat had made its way to the Oval Office when the Russians were there. Can you imagine? Now, with all these wild things going on, anybody would say, oh, well, of course it was a cat, and they're recording.
Wow.
Anyway,
that is so cool.
We'd accept it. That's so funny. I love that story. It's just a great
story.
So
is this why the president always, the first family always has a dog?
A
just
dog,
in case there's
right.
a recorded cat
that's
somewhere?
That's right, because the cat's always spying on them, so they can't do it. Anyway, we'll skip on to May the 20th, which is World Meteorological, World Meteorology Day. In 1899, the first traffic ticket in the U.S., New York City traffic driver Jacob Gurman was arrested for speeding while driving 12 miles an hour on Lexington Avenue.
The terror.
Yeah. In 1927, Charles Lindbergh took off from Roosevelt Field, Long Island, in the Spirit of St. Louis, and he was attempting to win a $25,000 prize for the first solo non-flight between New York and Paris. 33 hours later, after a 3,600-mile journey, he landed in Paris, earning him the nickname Lucky Lindy and becoming an instant worldwide hero. But there's more. On the same date, in 1932, Amelia Earhart followed in his wake by becoming the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic from Newfoundland to Londonderry, Ireland. So she had a totally different takeoff and landing, and her flight was 2,026 miles, and she made it in about 13 hours. A little smaller flight, but nonetheless, it was an achievement.
Absolutely.
And 5 years after that, along with her navigator, Fred Noonan, she disappeared while trying to fly her twin-engine plane around the equator. And they're still making movies and suppositions and documentaries.
Didn't they find her remains now?
No, they've claimed that they've come close, but I don't think anyone's found the exact wreckage. Or attributed to the exact wreckage. It's hard to know.
Nature has a nice tendency to clean up after itself. So
yeah,
it
does.
No traces.
It does. And that, dear listeners, brings to a close another passing parade of interesting, mundane, unusual, and occasionally bizarre.
Occasionally bizarre?
Occasionally bizarre, but that make up
just spying cats.
History. Spying cats. Is that the wild? I mean, that's one of my. You like the grapefruit over Florida. I like Acoustic Kitty.
You know what?
Acoustic Kitty.
Both stories are fantastic.
They are. They're wonderful.
Both stories
and
are
real.
Fantastic. This is why, you know, truth can be stranger than fiction.
It can.
Oh, so it
who
can.
Who needs fake? Who needs stinking fake news
exactly,
on the podcast?
Exactly. Oh, thank you so much, Nancy, for
Acoustic Kitty.
Oh, my God. What? The look on these guys' faces when that cat went 10 feet and got
I want to know what it recorded.
when they opened the black box, all they found was... Oh, God. Oh, my God. Well, before we go to take a break, let's do a quick...
Things that make you go...
Oh, God. All right. Something a bit more serious. You guys are going to love this. I shared this story on Facebook, and I got close to 1,000 shares of this story. And this is right here in Canada. Now, if you guys had any doubt that Quebec was the progressive part of Canada, here's proof. Churches in Montreal are becoming concerned about hosting community groups after being hit with bills for taxes. They're taxing churches in Montreal. Let me repeat that. There are taxing churches in Montreal.
Woot, woot.
Now, Joel Coppetier, which is the minister at the Côte des Neiges Presbyterian Church, was shocked when his institution first received a municipal tax bill in early 2015. It was the first indication that something had changed, said Coppetier. Provincial law exempts churches and... from paying municipal taxes, but Coppetier was told that if a church is vacant or if a man's or, you know, any part of the property of the church is vacant for several months between ministers, it's taxable. So in other words, if you're in the church and you're praying, that's fine, but if you have a couple of adjacent properties that are not being used or for the poor or the needy or for a service, boom, you're being taxed on. That's beautiful. So following that, city officials arrived for inspection at every room in the church and and how they were used. The indication is there is not an exemption for the church as a whole. There's only an exemption for those areas used in public worship and things directly related to it.
Wow, I wonder how that piece of legislation ever got through.
I don't know.
That is strange.
As a result, many churches in Montreal are facing mounting tax bills. Coppetier said the city has changed how it interprets the law. We're there to care and serve the community. That's part of it. So Coppetier says taxes are due even when services are suspended for renovations. No break at all here. Yeah. The amount owed in taxes can increase swiftly if a church closes its doors. When Trinity Memorial Church closed its doors earlier this year, the city started enacting taxes immediately following the last service. Ruthless, wow. And I love it.
Well, I'm kind of conflicted here. I'm feeling the old Robin Hood. Did you ever watch that cartoon, the Disney cartoon? Was it Disney for Robin Hood?
Probably.
And the churches were being taxed. The tax man was coming along and taking the money right out of the coffers.
Mm-hmm. Can't
well,
get more direct.
You know what, though? It's a building. It's taking up community services. It's got fire service, it's got police service, it's got road access.
Exactly.
It's got all of these things. They should be paying for that just like anyone else.
I think they're interpreting the law in a very reasonable way in Montreal. If you're using the building and you used it for community service, fine. We'll exempt taxes on that because you're actually providing a service. If it's just a church that sits empty most of the week except on Sundays, and you're still collecting all the tithe and all that stuff, you know what? Boom, let's hit you with taxes because you're really not helping the community. And you know what? Bravo.
Yep.
Bravo to Montreal for doing that. I hope it spreads.
Well, exactly. I'm wondering if it goes province to province, which provinces are going to embrace it and which provinces are going to say no, religion should be exempt. It'd be very interesting.
I'm surprised it happened in Quebec first because Quebec is traditionally... Catholic province, like they're very religious.
As a Quebecer, I can tell you, no, they're not very religious. That's the thing.
Really?
Just because there's actually almost a disdain for religion in many places, and you can. One of the first indication of that was when I was in history class in high school. The teacher would tell you that people would ask, "Why is every little town named Saint something, Saint Michel, Saint Madeleine, Saint whatever?" And he would, the teacher, and this is the way I'm paraphrasing him, but the teacher explained it this way. He says, it's quite simple. He says, the religious people, the bishop, who used to take a bunch of people from Quebec City and go to this place and say, you know, sign of the cross, all right, this is the community of Saint-Anselm. See you guys, I'm going back to town. And you had to build a little city from there. So there was already this disdain for how the church
Okay, so how did they come up with Saint Jolie de Haha?
Oh, I don't. Don't ask me. But you know, I think
I love driving by that sign.
I think Catholicism in Quebec is more a question of tradition now than it is a question of religiosity, and that's simply it. I don't think most people are now religious, like a lot of people like us, and I think it's the unspoken truth about all this. So I hope
they're setting a trend.
When I took this story and I posted it on Facebook, it was from CTV News. Spread like wildfire. Like almost 1,000 shares right away. It's like, oh my God. It just
looks... So this is just the city of Montreal that's doing this?
Yes.
Okay.
At this point. But it's the first step. So I hope it spreads. And you know what? I don't see why it wouldn't. And you know, for government that are so strapped in cash and always trying to, you know, shift the tax burden onto the payers and all that, why not? Why not go after that little bit of church money? It's not like they're using it for... community services.
Like you say, if the church can show that they're using their property for...
And that's fair.
...church services
that's totally
all
fair.
Week long.
Place of worship, you want to be tax exempt, okay, fine. Although I still don't like the idea, but sure, fine, let's go with that. And if you're actually using the grounds for the Boy Scouts or for, you know, a community...
All of the community service organizations.
Exactly. And that's fair. That's fair. You're doing a community service. That's fair. But in the meantime, it's not being used, boom, we're taxing you. And why not?
Yeah,
that is awesome.
I think whether it was the U.S. that last year that I was reading about, that if a church did do community service and could document that they were feeding the homeless or having a Boy Scout troop or doing something, that the taxes would be offset depending on the amount of community service that they actually engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was the States. I don't think it was.
Well, that sounds almost like what Montreal's doing.
Yeah, I wonder if I've got my countries mixed up, but it makes sense. And it brings churches, you know, into actually doing some service rather than talking about it, which is, you know, supposedly what a church is for. Anyway.
So a little more progressive, could that be applied to other businesses? So if a business is utilizing their property for community service.
Well, in a way, they're almost doing it already. I mean, we've had this discussion here in Vancouver about the empty houses that are bought from China, right? And they've applied that 15% tax if you're a non-resident and the house just sits empty. Because in a way, it does destroy the neighborhood. So I totally get why they would do that. Okay.
But there's an argument to be made that it's unfair, you know, for people who are on vacation or go on an extended holiday, all of a sudden now they're taxed because their houses are empty. I read pros and cons, but
My heart's not bleeding for those people. If you have enough money that you can spend 182 days in Florida and 183 days in Vancouver, and you've got a house in Florida, maybe on the beach in Miami, and you got the big $1 million mansion, $2 million mansion in Vancouver. I'm not really bleeding for you.
I can understand that.
Pay your 15%.
Of course, you know, when I posted this story, there was a couple of answers, the people that answered me back rather negatively about this. There was this one person I won't name that said, you know, she said that essentially this was about property value. And she said, no, these people are just trying to get those churches to close. She's a religious person. Because the church are saying what is considered prime real estate, and the city can develop it after, and she kind of berated me, saying, you know, it's so sad that you're so rabid about your religion of atheism, and you want to ram it down everybody's throat. So I answered, well, that's funny. I said, first of all, atheism isn't a religion; it's simply a response to a question. And it's rich to say that I'm shoving atheism down your throat. That's right. We atheists have passed blasphemy laws. We have tax exemption. We knock on your door and spread the good news. We lobby politicians from Sunday pulpits. We even have columns in the local papers promoting atheism. We even try our best to offer alternative theory to creationism in Sunday school. We make sure our hospitals deny care to those people because of our belief in science. And we even let those die because they didn't pray. I'm so tired of shoving atheism down your throat, I mean.
Did you get a bunch of likes on that one? Or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect.
Did she unfriend you after that?
No, but I expect it soon. She reads it.
That's one way to unfriend people in a hurry.
Oh, God. So let's go to commercial break, and we'll be right back with Apophenia. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm the Supreme Irreverend Dr. Randy Tyson from the Legion of Reason Diversion. Join me and my co-hosts, Christine Shelska, Twyla, and Nate Phelps, as we explore issues at the intersection of atheism, humanism, and skepticism. Topics range from alternative medicine to the interference of religion in public policy. We often have special guests to help us understand the topic du jour. Previous guests include biologist Jerry Coyne, ex-Muslim author Ali Rizvi, philosopher Peter Boghossian, and the late physicist Victor Stanger. You can watch us on the Legion of Reason YouTube channel or subscribe to the audio version through your favorite podcatcher such as iTunes or Stitcher. And don't forget to like the Legion of Reason Facebook page.
If your skepticism is socially conscious and doesn't take itself too seriously, you might like life, the universe, and everything else.
People like Ray Comfort are fond of saying, "What use is half a wing, right?" Have you ever seen a fucking penguin?
Life, the universe, and everything else. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and pretty much anywhere else.
I don't know, Zune? Is that still a thing?
A Canadian, a New Yorker, and a Southern Belle walked into a podcast, and all hell broke loose. Seriously, though, what happens when we three ladies get together? Well, definitely a lot of talking. And accents. Funny accents. Well, I don't have an accent, but my co-hosts sure do. We mix North, South, and the Great White North together for 2 hours of pure secular discussion. Nothing is off limits. From goofy religions like Scientology, woo like ghost hunting and alternative medicine, to hardcore history, hermeneutics, sex, and science, we cover it all. What the heck is a hermeneutic? Well, it's not a guy named Herman who sings falsetto, that's for sure. Join Beth, Ashley, and myself, Deborah, every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and we take you beyond the trailer park and bring the conversation to life. Join us live on YouTube and participate in the conversation via the Q&A system, or catch us later on Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, and Nobex. Visit www.beyondthetrailerpark.com for links to the show and our upcoming schedule. Bring your wine and sweet tea and settle in for fun facts and free thinking. We happily wear the explicit tag, though, so make sure to wash out your mouth with something tasty before listening. That's live at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Come give us a like and a share, no matter what type of accent you have.
Whoever is led to believe that species are mutable will do good service by conscientiously expressing his conviction. For only thus can the load of prejudice by which this subject is overwhelmed be removed.
So what you know about natural selection? Go ahead and ask a question and see where the answer
is. And we're back. All right. Well, before we get into your subject of apophenia and pareidolia, which is...
Wow, I think the pronunciations of those down. I'll just let you say it every time I come to the word.
I think Nancy said it best. It sounds like a tourist place, you know.
It is actually from a Greek.
It does.
Origin.
You're going from one little Greek city to the other with ouzo little with ouzo in between.
Oh, let's do a segment that we always love called Another Brilliant Moment.
Uh-oh.
Brought to you by religion. Okay. Now, guys, I'm afraid to have to announce that the Earth is flat. Did you know that? And here's proof. Because a flat Earth conspiracy theorist YouTuber has taken on... He went on a plane, right? He wanted to prove that the Earth was flat. And you know what he did an experiment, a scientific experiment. Uh-huh. And you know what he brought on the to measure that the Earth was flat? A carpenter level. Now, YouTube conspiracy theorist D. Marble, I think he lost his marbles too, took a flight from North Carolina to Seattle in order to monitor whether or not the pilot would dip the nose of the plane to compensate for the curvature on the planet. And he did that by bringing a carpenter level on board the plane.
So a scientific genius.
Oh,
sure.
Absolutely.
He's got all the intelligence of a gnat.
That high?
Right, the gnat knows how to fly.
Well, the funny thing is it's from North Carolina to Seattle. It's not that big of a trip either, right? So him and his followers believe in his video that the Earth is flat. He says, quote, I recorded 23 minutes and 45 seconds time lapse, which by those measurements mean the plane traveled a little over 203 miles. He explained his video. According to the curvature math given by to explain the globe model, this should have resulted in the compensation of a 5 mile of curvature. Now, interestingly, he actually did a bit of science and calculations to come up with that answer, but he's completely wrong about it. So
he missed one part of the equation, and that's that gravity also follows you around the curvature.
Exactly.
So if we put a level on your floor, of the floor of our studio, and it's level, that's another indication that the Earth is flat.
Exactly. This is why I'm converting now.
That's right. He never had to get on the plane. He could just, you know, put it right.
Quote, understand that gravity is still just a theory, he goes on to say. No more defending what we know to be true. Now we take the flight to the enemy. The video has been shared by several Flat Earther society, including Flat Earth Activism, God's Flat Earth, and various globe deniers around the globe. Yep, the joke never gets old. Of course, then it went on Twitter, and Twitter kind of had a field day with that.
Did Donald Trump weigh in on it?
No. And one of the best lines was from a guy named Tom Online at... He says, I want to explain physics to him, but I'm afraid of violating the prime directive. Oh, God. All right.
That was cool.
Well, here's another nice little story. You know, because when it comes to God, you never know where you'll find him. And this Florida mother finds God in her newborn's baby soiled diaper.
Well, it's an appropriate place.
So. Yeah. Holy shit, is right. So you never know when God will send you a sign. And some people claim he talks to them in their dream. And some people find him in their toes. And Florida's Kathy Vasquez found him through her newborn's baby diaper.
Oh, my.
There's a picture here. I'll show you the picture if you want.
No, I don't want to see the picture.
Did she pass it around? Hopefully she didn't frame it and put it on the wall.
Well, she didn't. I don't know if she pushed around the diaper, but she wrote it on her Facebook page. She says, quote, sometimes in our busy, crazy, hectic lives, we forget how wonderful God is. Today I feel although he sent me a sign saying everything will be all right. I'm right here by your sign. The sign came in the oddest form. My baby's poop. I went to change his diaper, and he pooped across.
Holy shit balls!
It might not be the prettiest sign, but...
God stinks.
Oh, but you knew where I'd see it. My baby's diaper. Hard to miss. That was right there in front of you. If you want or you can feel free to share the message that God is with us and he gives us signs to let us know things will be okay. It's not always the prettiest sign, but it puts it where he knows we'll see it.
Oh.
Holy shit indeed. So wow. As far as we can tell, Vasquez is sincerely religious and not trying to troll people. And the diaper is any indication of my own baby's bowel movement. This is from him and Meta. Must have been a God screaming at me because there was a hell of a lot of crosses planted together. I guess that means emptying out the diaper genie is a form of blasphemy.
Oh.
Oh my God. Oh, what would we do without the religious, right?
Yeah.
We just
have a little better, but it wouldn't be so
strange.
It wouldn't be as funny.
Oh God, yes. All right. Let's move on. All right, so today we're talking about apophenia and pareidolia. Scott,
yes.
The mic is all yours. You're going to lead this. I have
all
no
right.
idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea what I'm talking about either. So
right.
A while ago, Kevin asked if I wanted to run with an idea for show content. His suggestion was to tackle visual miracles.
That was my
things
suggestion?
People see. Yeah, that was your suggestion.
Oh, wow.
And,
actually,
and
had a good idea.
That story that you led right into it with the diaper story.
Perfect.
That was great. What I found was interesting, the topic is well documented from several angles, depending on how you want to skin this cat.
Cat reference. This show
we're
is coming together
about,
very well today.
We're
it
not
really
talking
is.
About acoustic
this
kitty
show,
here.
This show is catastrophic.
Some examples of these miracles, which we just heard about one that was really interesting. I'd never heard that one before. I've chosen some from an ABC News article, and they center on the face of Christ. Okay, so a pierogi, as seen in a photo from September 13th, 2014, at St. Andre's Besset Catholic Church in Ecorse, Michigan, appearing to show Christ. And yes, the picture did look like Christ's face on the pierogi. Kind of a strange place to find it, but
maybe. If you can find it in the diaper, who's to question a pierogi?
I'm not going to question a pierogi.
Yeah, but maybe the chosen people are not the Jews after all. Maybe they're Ukrainians.
That's right.
An image of Christ was spotted during a spectacular Northern Lights display near the town of Akranes, Iceland, by photographer John Hilmerson. I'm massacring his name.
He'll forgive us, I'm sure.
Yeah, who was prompted by his 10-year-old son to take photographs, and this was in February 2013. Ernesto Hernandez of Pocono Summit, Pennsylvania, saw the face of Christ in a golden-brown breading of chicken dinner his wife prepared. Cowgirl Cafe flipped a pancake with a face resembling Jesus on Friday, April 18, 2014. Owner Karen Hendrickson said it wasn't served to a customer. What did they do? Frame it? Like sold it to a church? I don't know.
Double the price.
Jim Lowry of Brooklyn, Ohio, found bird droppings on a windshield that he believes looks similar to Christ's face.
I'm beginning to feel so left out.
We don't get the message like that.
A family in Splendora, Texas, says an image of Jesus was created by mold in their bathroom. People say your house is blessed, Cheyenne Richards told ABC's Houston station KTRK. I see the head, the hair, a cloak.
Oh my God.
So that must be fuzzy mold or. Don Taylor of Colorado spotted a high voltage Jesus near Littleton on a phone pole. He told ABC 7 in Denver that he's a non-religious individual, but he was stopped in his tracks when he saw the unusual vine growth across from a church, which appears to be the form of a crucified Jesus.
On the phone pole
with the wires. Yeah, it did look pretty good. It was, I saw the picture. It was.
Yeah, reach out and touch someone with Jesus.
No, I just figured out my last statement. We see nothing because we're atheists. There's nothing.
Well,
I don't feel left out anymore.
We'll lead into that. The face of Jesus Christ on a slice of three cheese pizza pie. The owners of Posh Pizza in Brisbane, Australia, not only spotted the holy image on the pie, they put it up for sale on eBay. According to Australia's Herald Sun, it ultimately sold for about $158. Posh Pizza said the money would be donated directly to charity.
Oh, see, there's a brilliant idea. We could just fake these things and just find the image of Jesus and just sell it to some...
Ah, the money.
Oh, yes.
There's a sucker
money
born every minute.
Exactly.
The structures making up the face... was composed, okay, so this is in a picture that the description kind of got a little messed up here in my notes. The structures making up the face was composed of the heart, blood vessels, bronchi, was seen during an examination of the thoracic spine via an open MRI machine by radiologists Christopher Vittori and Kevin Tribble. Now, that's interesting. So it looked like Jesus in the person's MRI.
Oh my God.
and these are all looking for like face. You'll notice most of these are all facial things, right? An image of Jesus appeared in a sand dune. This is from Google Earth. So looking into the explanations for these sightings, I was able to find. Now, from Wikipedia, apophenia is the human tendency to perceive meaningful patterns within random data.
Aha.
Okay. And there is actually a web page I can go to on that. There's another one called Simulacra, which is perceptions of religious imagery in natural phenomena, called Simulacra, with spiritual or religious themes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then there's pareidolia, which is a psychological phenomenon in which the mind responds to a stimulus, an image or a sound, by perceiving a familiar pattern where none exists. So these get confusing when you look at them because they all describe almost the same thing.
Yes. Yes, they do.
And this is from skeptic.com.
Okay.
There is an universal tendency among mankind to conceive all things like themselves and to transfer to every object those qualities with which they are familiarly acquainted and of which they are intimately conscious. We find human faces on the moon, armies in the clouds, and by natural propensity, if not corrected by experience and reflection, ascribe malice or goodwill to everything that hurts or pleases us. And that was David Hume. He was a Scottish philosopher, historian, economist, and essayist, who is best known today for his highly influential system of philosophical empiricism, skepticism, and naturalism. Mm. That is from Wikipedia. That man died in 1776. So
one of the inspirations for the late great Christopher Hitchens as well. He was pretty fond of David Hume.
So an interesting discussion. What do you guys think of?
Well, I mean, it's quite, you know, if you do know even a little bit about biology and human prehistory, recognizing patterns is what helped us survive. You know, there's always that that old Michael Shermer saying, you know, it says you see a rustling in the grass, and oh, you can you'll recognize that as either the wind or a predator, and if you flee, your chances are, even if it's just a wind, but you recognize that pattern all the time, right? The recognizing the pattern of a lion in the savannah, recognizing the pattern of threats, and it's something that we've become very, very good at, and of course we see it now today, and we see. You know, we do it as a game for kids. You know,
sure, how many times in the clouds.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Connect the dots, and then I guess you could extrapolate to Rorschach test.
The Rorschach test. Yes. Finding that pattern.
Finding that, but we are hardwired for that. We have to.
We
be.
Totally are hardwired for that, and it's. I find it amazing when they always see these patterns of Jesus. They want to find Jesus. It's totally obvious they want to find Jesus, and. Especially when we consider that the modern depiction of Jesus is probably not even a right one. You know, there's always been the rumor going around that actually that is the depiction of Cesare Borgia, one of the son of the he was the Pope, one of the Borgias there. Yeah, and you know, that was the rumor for the longest time that the modern depiction of Jesus is actually that guy, and it's not the Jesus of history if he ever existed. Mm-hmm. So I find it amazing that people are going out of their way. And also incredible to these people not stopping for half a second to think that Jesus appearing in mold, in bird droppings.
Bird droppings,
Really? Is this the best you have? Yeah. No, Jesus in mold? Come on. I mean, you think the creed of the universe would have something a bit more grand in mind than, you know, appearing in mold or something like that?
Well, it's interesting. People that do that, you really have to, at least I wonder about how they perceive the world in general. I mean, they obviously are religious people, but what is it that made that leap, you know, for them to be able to see Jesus in the pizza pie, you know, and feel, well, that's perfectly okay. It's a sign to me. It's not anything strange. This is actually a sign.
Yeah.
And then the whole church then, no. You know, believe that actually happened? Are there skeptics or do they feel, no, it's a sign?
It's a cultural thing. The perceiver, the person perceiving the image is forming the image based on their own cultural and
yes.
belief biases, mm-hmm.
yes.
right?
Yes.
So we don't see it because we're not looking for it.
Yeah.
We're you know, as atheists, I don't know how you're seeing Jesus in that, but okay, whatever you say, I'll take your word for it because I don't see it. Mind you, I do see the duck in the clouds or the rabbit or, you know, little girl with an umbrella. I've seen things like that, and yeah.
But then that really brings up an interesting question, and I don't know about the sightings that they're probably in one category, but let's say Kevin and I, and you you know, we were all going out, and Teresa, we were all going out for pizza, and we all see Jesus in the pizza. What does that, I mean, we all recognize that we may not say Jesus, but it's a human being. And then we say, oh, but it could be Jesus. Well, would we see it?
Well, it's because the image of the Jesus is iconic, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody, for example, never even touch Catholicism or Christianity in any way, shape, or form, might say a bearded man, or might say Eric Clapton, or, you know.
Yeah, hey.
Might say a whole bunch of things, but we recognize that Jesus because the image is so iconic, right? That's the first one we go to.
It's a cultural inference, and the perceiver is in control of that, right?
Now, you can take it one step further, because when you talk about near-death experiences, isn't that interesting also that when you have a near-death experience, people see what their culture or religious upbringing told them they would see, right? If you're a Christian, you end up, you know, tunnel of light and fluffy on the clouds, and there's Jesus. But if you're Muslim, you know, tunnel of light and 72 virgins and Allah or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And even there was this one case I remember that struck me because it happened to be a near-death experience that happened to a four-year-old. And when they asked him to describe what he saw, he essentially described a nice park with four rivers of different color. There was a yellow river and a green river and a red river, and there were like puppies and stuff like that. And when you stop for half a second,
things that he would have wanted to see.
But it's not just that. If you put that image on paper, that's exactly the drawing of a child, of a 4-year old child.
Exactly.
Yeah, rainbow.
Exactly.
That's his world.
That's his world.
The rainbow connection, right?
Exactly. Interesting.
Psychology.
Yeah, yes. I would love to find out how if atheists or non-believers, I don't want to say, if non-believers have ever spotted a Jesus and reported it.
If they ever spotted a Jesus and in
a pizza or in the diapers or in a piece of toast.
Oh, yeah, where it's an atheist going, oh, my God.
Yeah, where it's an atheist that's reported it and said, I see this.
That's a good question.
I didn't even look into that aspect of it. I do know that under the pareidolia, or actually the Cimarron, whatever it was, that second one that I said, they describe Christians tend to see Christian. So they'll see the Virgin Mary. They'll see the face of Jesus. They'll see other religious figures that they're familiar with, that they're familiar with the appearance of. When you go to the Muslims, now the Muslims see their language. They actually see the words of, and it's interesting because what they attribute it to is that it's their language is a very simplified, what do they call it, cuneiform? It's not like the alphabet. It's drawn letters, and it's very easy for them to identify with those. So they'll see religious references from the Quran that they recognize, right?
Yeah, and it's as soon as they see a reference or something that might just tie where they made that connection
triggers,
to them, it just equals truth right away.
Yeah.
But then when we see it, when it's posted, we see it as described.
Well, sure, you know, because somebody's describing it to us.
Because then there's no more the pattern is already there, and we're predisposed to say, yes, I see the Jesus in that cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's interesting. It really is.
It really is. So apophenia, like says, a spontaneous perception of connection and meaningfulness of unrelated phenomenon. The term was coined by German neurologist and psychiatrist Klaus Conrad.
1958.
Yes. He didn't live very long, 1905 to 1961. Conrad focused on the finding of abnormal meanings or significance in random experiences by psychotic people. And we see this on a very regular basis, especially in movies, right? How many times do you have they're on a quest, but they find clues that leads to the next one, and they find these links, this mysterious links that doesn't really make any sense, but somehow it leads them to the treasure,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Unrelated clues that form a pattern in somebody's mind, and they make the aha
moment. Aha, the aha moment, exactly.
The aha moment.
The aha moment. And
most
you know,
of us would never recognize the aha moment. I realized that watching these movies that...
You recognize it when you watch it two and three times. Oh, yeah, that makes sense now.
Well, it's like MacGyver. It's like MacGyver. He has to solve a problem, and he has unrelated can of hairspray and a rubber chicken and two folding chairs. Oh, he can make a weapon. He can make yeah, oh, right. Oh, wow. He can.
He had a paper clip, a piece of twine, and bubble gum. He made a nuclear warhead.
Exactly.
I think they remade MacGyver, didn't they?
Yeah.
They remade
series. It didn't. No? I don't think it lasted.
Okay, well, can't blame
just no. Wasn't the same without Richard Dean Anderson.
No, but I guess,
it's the mullet.
Maybe, yeah, I guess that's the ultimate pattern.
Yes.
You know, that forms a solution.
And, of course, pareidolia is a type of apophenia, which is more generalized in terms of seeing patterns of random data. Some common example is seeing the likeness of Jesus in the clouds or an image of a man on the surface of the moon.
Exactly.
I think what we're missing here is I think pareidolia has probably also given rise to legends and myth of ancient, right? Like the man on the moon, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the face of the man on the moon, I think, was probably one of the reasons people started thinking about things like extraterrestrials, right? The face on Mars.
The face on Mars.
The face on Mars, yeah. You know? Which, of
that's,
course...
That's a really good example, actually, because that's one where, if you look at it from a different angle, they always pick on that one picture.
Oh, yeah, which was...
If you look at it from a different angle, there's no face there.
No. It's just outcroppings. Of course, the face on Mars, if people don't know, is a picture that was taken by... What was it? The face on Mars. What was the craft on Mars... It was one of the early crafts in the 70s that took a picture of...
Oh, that wouldn't have been Viking. Or not Viking.
Face on Mars. Yes, Viking 1 mission returned the pictures of the Martian surface in 1976. The image show a rocky face in the region, and it, because of the shade against this mountain, it looked like a ghostly face. It really did look like a ghostly face.
Well, this happens all the time in places where there are mountains and you have different craggy outreach. What do you, the little crag, and someone will say, oh, that looks just like the Iroquois chief.
Yes.
And so they'll name that, or it's Elephant Rock.
Yes.
Or Shirakawa Bluff or something.
There's a rock like that right across the street in Mission, across the water in Mission, that from the Halem tribe, and legends have built around it, and it's supposed to be a man looking up. It looks like a freaking boulder. I mean, I don't see it at all, but yeah. It gave rise to their legends, and the legend about this man who apparently was a hero, and he was kind of transformed into a rock, and whatever. And going back on the face on Mars, it's exactly that. That image... where we saw this image of Viking 1, gave rise to a plethora of conspiracy theories about people on Mars and civilizations on Mars and, you know, conspiracy theories, how the government's hiding this and, you know.
But just, the Earth's flat.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And just from that one image, which was a trick of the mind, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And here we go, we've got these conspiracy theories all from that one image. So it just goes that we can be easily fooled.
Yeah.
And I think if we took this argument far enough, I think we'd end up at free will.
Well, we could. We totally could.
But it's fast. I mean, our minds are just absolutely fascinating, as the neuroscientists have been pointing out.
Did you guys ever see that picture? That picture of, it was speaking of pareidolia and... apophenia. I guess it's more pareidolia, that one, because it was a dog's butt, but it looked like Jesus.
Oh, yes, I saw that one.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And it, you know, right away you see it, it's like, that's perfect. You know, Jesus appears in mysterious places.
Why do people believe in that stuff?
Well, you know, I think.
Why are people paying so much attention to a dog's butt?
I think
now,
that was
a question
you've got to ask.
Was that aimed at me?
There's a philosophical question, if there ever was one.
That was aimed at me, I think. oh, perfect. All right. Oh, goodness. I guess we'll end the show on that. Time for my rant. Now, on this show, you've probably noticed there is an endless supply of stories of people finding significance and or signs of the supernatural in everyday objects and situations. I have no idea what our Another Brilliant Moment Brought to You by Religion segment would look like if it wasn't for apophenia and pareidolia. That said, we might be tempted to look upon those that find Jesus in a diaper, on a pierogi, or on a dog's butt as a victim of a system imposed upon them as children. After all, the old Jesuit adage of, "Give me the first 7 years and I will give you the man," a quote falsely attributed to Ignatius Loyola, comes to mind. But this is the age of information. There is no excuse to think that the almighty creator of the universe, one who speaks things into being, arbiter of life and death, chooses to reveal his glory on a grilled cheese sandwich? After seeing the cornucopia of ridiculous claims ranging from Cheetos Jesus, or Cheeses, to the Weeping Mary statue, which turns out the water actually came from a broken toilet, a reasonable believer should start asking, maybe it's me. And that is what this folly is all about. I bet that deep down, many Christians know full well that their ship isn't holding water, and it's quickly sinking. And if there's something all human hates, it's being wrong. We hate it to the point of looking for solutions, patterns, and clues to reinforce our bias. With our natural tendency to find these patterns, it becomes all too easy to purposely fool ourselves into belief to make sure we remain on that emotional high mythology gives us. I have no sympathy for these people. You aren't victims. You're scared. Scared of what it means to live in a world with no safety net, no second chance, and accountable for your mistakes. There never was a scapegoating Jesus to save you from yourself, and if you truly think that a cloud, a form of a cloud, is a convincing way of relaying a message from the divine, well, no wonder the Bible holds sway over your life. All you've really proven is your refusal to grow up. And that takes us to the end of our show. Unless you get something else to add.
No. We could talk about that one all day. Pareidolia. I mean, I'm not the dog's butt. But.
No, it's good. It's good to have the time sometimes when we don't have a guest, when we can just ramble and bring out all of these arcane and interesting topics that are thought provoking.
We're rambling,
all right. I'm hoping that our audience is having as much fun as we are, because this can really lead you down interesting pareidolia pathways.
Pareidolia apophenia pathways.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. If you see our www.leftofthevalley.com in the clouds, feel free to contact us. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. You can send us an email at leftofthevalley@outlook.com. And I found that by looking in the sand. Coming up, I'm not even sure what we got next week. I don't even have the schedule with me, but we'll have something for sure. And we have Del Rey coming up as well. And we're also in talks with David Smalley and Jerry Coyne.
Oh, is Jerry Coyne coming on?
I'm trying to get him to come.
Oh, boy.
And if Jerry Coyne comes, we'll be talking about why evolution is true.
Oh,
good.
Yeah.
Good. We need that.
Yes. Well, you know, we already know it's true, but, you know, some people out there apparently need more convincing.
Yeah.
The same kind of people that take levels on airplanes and
figure that's going to tell them where, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
No, he'll be an interesting guest. He goes off in so many different directions and yes. Very thought provoking.
I'm also trying to get Jerry DeWitt to come, so that should be fun too. Jerry DeWitt was one of the first ones to go through the clergy project. He was a preacher. He totally has that preacher swagger and probably the best hair in atheism. And today he's an atheist, so his story from being a preacher to an atheist should be a compelling one.
Looking forward to it.
Anything else you want to add?
No, we'll be here in Apophenia, same time, same place, same station.
Why? When you say it, Nancy, you say that word, and all I see is the Greek amphitheaters. You know, the big amphitheaters with all the concrete staging.
There's your pattern.
Nice and easy. Thank you, guys. Until next time. Don't believe in them. I think the reason is apparent. You do what you're told and believe in the God assigned by your parents. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith and unsubstantiated claims. That's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist. Atheist. I'm in
me take a sec. Don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful. The thousands of children are raped by priests, and since they're holy men of God, they get away scot-free. And the Pope does his very best to keep it on the hush. Don't wanna affect business, he loves money too much. We know that they love the kids, but how the fuck can we protect them while they planning to molest them? We teaching them to respect them.
Respect them. Fuck that.
The system is broke down, working backwards, and the only action or tactic I plan to practice now is to attack them. The parties of God's hands are bloodstained, millions of murders by believers, and they're all in God's name. And let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that many atheists are told to be quiet. You're not alone, speak your mind, time to let it be known. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith, and unsubstantiated claims, that's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.